freedom riders roll along. Freedom riders won't be long.
In the summer of 1961, hundreds of young Americans, black and white, rose up together to do something that might seem ordinary today, but was monumental at that time. They got on the bus. They called themselves the Freedom Riders, and over 400 of them risked their lives, limb and liberty, as they traveled through Mississippi and other southern states that long, hot summer. Some even gave their lives. 50 years ago this month, the Freedom Riders took the deep dive into the Deep South to deliberately violate Jim Crow laws there. It was a pivotal moment in the civil rights struggle. Today, we are joined by two of those Freedom Riders. Hank Thomas was one of the original Freedom Riders. After the rides, he served in the Vietnam War and returned home after being wounded. In recent years, Mr. Thomas has owned and operated several businesses in Atlanta. And Robert Filner is a member of the U.S. Congress representing California's 51st Congressional District. He was a student at Cornell University when he joined the Freedom Rides. Listeners, we want to hear from you. Do you know someone who was a Freedom Rider or knew a Freedom Rider? Were you a Freedom Rider? Or do you have any particular memories of Freedom Summer? Give us a call, 212-433-WNYC. That's 212-433-9692. Hank Thomas, I want to start with you. In 1961, you were just 19 years old, a student. And on May 4th, you boarded a Greyhound bus in Washington, D.C. You headed south. You were one of the original 13 students to take that bus ride. How did you come to get on the bus?
Well, good morning, first of all, and thank you very much for having me and Congressman aboard. I was a student at Howard University and had already, like so many students in the South, had participated in sit-in movements. So when CORE sent out the call for volunteers to engage in this project, it was just a logical first step, next step for me. But before I do that, let me say this, that on that ride of the 13 of us, there were 7 blacks and 6 whites. Mm. And of the 6 whites, 4 of them were Jews. Mm. And the reason I mention that is because I want people to know, just like when, you know, we defeated Germany, it was called a defeat of the Allies of Germany. And in our fight for human rights in this country, we had allies. And the most important allies in terms of as a group were American Jews. So I always either start or finish my talk with, lest I forget thee, O Jerusalem. We owe a tremendous debt of gratitude to the American Jews who fought with us. And as you all know, of the 3 civil rights workers who were killed in 64, 2 of them were Jews. We should never forget Jerusalem.
Yes, and of course, we thank you so much for saying that. And you speak, of course, of Schwerner, Cheney, and Goodman, the 3 very young boys who lost their lives Freedom Summer. And that, of course, takes me to Congressman Filner. I'm very moved at this moment, Congressman, so I'll just ask you to tell us how you got on the bus.
You know, I was a student at Cornell University and studying for my final exams on that Mother's Day of 1961. And when I saw that bus, which Hank was on, firebombed and forced off the road, everybody inside pulled out, almost beaten to death. And the documentary that was on public television on Monday showed, you know, Hank Thomas, who was a real hero and suffering from inhalation and smoke inhalation, and then almost beaten up when he got outside. But I saw that those bus rides, and I said, you know, this is not what America ought to be or what we have been taught America is. And I basically got on the next bus and said, we've got to change this. And it was, you know, as a white student, I realized my job was to make sure that publicity and the real heroes, the African-American students and older people who were facing, violence every single day of their lives in the South, and were the real targets on these bus rides, that, you know, we provided some cover, some publicity, some sense that that this was a all Americans, not just African Americans.
And Mr. Thomas, Congressman Filner refers to the fact that just about a week after joining the Freedom Rides, the extremely dangerous reality of what you had undertaken set in. Take us back to May 14th, 1961. What happened that day?
Well, as the bus pulled into Anniston, we knew we were going into an area that was quite well known for Klan activity. The black folks in Anniston, black folks' lives in Anniston, Alabama in those days was one of just could be constant terror if you, you know, did the wrong thing. So we were told after we left Atlanta that if we thought we were on a joyride up until then, that was going to change. And surely enough, as the bus pulled into the downtown area of Anniston, the streets were clear. And while you're kind of happy that nobody is throwing things at the bus, but when you look around and here you are in downtown on a Sunday afternoon and there is absolutely no one on the street, well, you've got a few seconds to say, what's going on here? And obviously the anticipation and anxiety heightened. And then when we turned a few corners to get to the area of the bus station, and then we saw it. The bus station must have had 25, 30, maybe even 40 men around it. And when the bus pulled in, they started cheering. And immediately the bus driver got out and for his safety, I suppose, and he did lock the door, which meant that people on the outside couldn't get in. And they immediately started attacking the bus and breaking out the windows. And after probably a few minutes, but it seems longer than that, another driver got on and tried to drive away in the bus. And unbeknownst to us at the time, folks outside had already cut the bus tires. And surely enough, within a few miles, the tires went flat and the bus had to pull over. Well, that mob got into their vehicles and followed us all the way. And they had vehicles in front of the bus to make sure that the bus, you know, really could not get away. Soon as it came to a stop, and again, that particular bus driver got off the bus and locked the door so they couldn't get in. And they finished breaking out all of the windows and still being frustrated of not being able to get in onto the bus. That's when they threw the incendiary grenade aboard the bus. And in just a few minutes, probably no more than a couple of minutes, the bus filled up with smoke. I knew if I got off that bus, I was going to be beaten to death. I knew if I stayed on the bus, I was going to be burned. So at 19, as naive as I was, I thought that if I took a deep breath, breathe in that toxic smoke, it would put me to sleep, and that was the way I was going to die. So for all practical purposes, I was looking for the easiest way to die, and somebody related to me later on said, in other words, you were committing suicide. Well, if that was the easiest way to get out, but I knew that on that particular day I was going to die. The thing that saved us was, you know, you breathe in the smoke and then the involuntary actions of your body take over and you're fighting for air and you're still trying to get out of there. Well, by then, they saw us rushing to try to get out. The mob then held the door shut, and because I knew how to hit that release latch, and they held the door shut, and you know, and I could hear them saying, let's burn them niggas alive. And within a couple of seconds, you know, divine providence intervened, and the fire reached the fuel tank of the bus. It blew up, blew out the back of the bus, and the crowd outside ran back, and that was the only way we got out of that bus.
And as you say, divine providence intervened.
Mm-hmm.
You survived. 14 of you barely escaped with
that
your lives,
right.
And you continued your work down there. And Congressman Filner, as you said, you saw this on television, and this motivated you to join the movement. And both of you then later found yourselves arrested
yes.
As part of your work. So it didn't get easier. It in fact, continued, both of you imprisoned. I have down the date June 1961, Congressman Filner, for you, after pulling into a bus station in Jackson, Mississippi, you and your co-riders arrested for, quote, disturbing the peace and inciting a riot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, here you were, a white man. What did local police make of you?
You know, at first, when, just to continue just briefly Hank's story, after all the violence in Alabama, the authorities there decided not to let buses stop there, and we ended up in Jackson, Mississippi, and the authorities there decided, rather than have violence, to arrest everybody, and then we started filling up the local jails and the county jails, so they moved us all to the state penitentiary at Parchman, which was a notorious kind of prison. So the idea was to fill up the jails and to stay in jail as long as possible. Under state law, you can appeal the case within a certain number of days. So we stayed 40 days in the penitentiary, and then appealed the case and brought the challenge to the segregation laws into the federal courts. That was the theory there, and. At first they looked at me as just, I didn't understand the situation. I remember as one of the youngest ones there, the police chief called me into his office and said, Martin Luther King is walking around New York, free man and having good meals, and you're stuck here in the jail. Don't you want to go home? And I just said, no, sir. But they just thought that, as they said, they treated their niggers very well, and all I had to do was learn it. But later, we got treated even worse because we were seen as traitors, not just uninformed. So we went through an evolution there, where at first they wanted to educate us, and then they saw us as even worse enemies.
Well, a lot of evolution since that time, and I want to ask both of you gentlemen about that in a minute. But first, I want to take a call from Judy, who is here in Manhattan, I believe on the Upper West Side.
Yes.
Judy, you're on WMYC.
Yes, hi. In 1964, I hitchhiked down to Birmingham, Alabama, and I went and lived at Miles College, a black college in Birmingham.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked on voter registration with Reverend Abraham Lincoln Woods, who's very, very famous civil rights leader in Birmingham, and just one other student. There were just three of us, and we went door to door in the black neighborhoods in Birmingham. There was a literacy test then, and we coached the black voters how to pass this literacy test. It was very easy. There were like 10 questions. And that summer, we registered only 200 voters. And so it was thrilling to me later on to see black mayor of Birmingham. And it was, we lived at Miles College, and this minister kind of protected me. I mean, he would drive around. I'd walk door to door, and he would kind of drive around the neighborhood sort of following me in a car. And
mm-hmm.
he said that once I was followed, and he thought something dangerous might happen. But people were very welcoming to me at the college, in their homes. I remember every single family had a picture of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King.
Ellen, thank you.
On the walls of their homes.
Thank you so much for your call. And Congressman and Hank, I want to ask you each what you think the legacy of Freedom Summer is today in 2011. Congressman, first to you.
You know, what occurred there is although there was violence and, some, as they said, people lost their lives, we ended up breaking the whole legal structure of segregation. We didn't make America perfect. Obviously, we had a long way to go. But we thought that we had a tremendous victory for America. And we had the people who came out of that experience had a tremendous optimism about change in America. It drove me into elected office finally and into Congress. But we saw that change can occur if you get involved. And you work, you work as a group, and you develop leadership, and you have courage, and you stick to a very nonviolent philosophy. We could change America, and I think that's still relevant today. I think we have to get back to those kind of tactics. You got to remember, you had a young president, Kennedy. They didn't want civil rights laws. The Congress was against them, and yet we forced the Civil Rights Act, the Voting Rights Act. We forced them to pass that legislation. And I think the same thing happened today. We have a new young president, an African-American president.
Yes, yes.
But people still have got to take take responsibility for change and force it on the Congress and the president.
And Hank Thomas, in the few seconds we have left, you were so eloquent at the beginning of our conversation. What do you see as the legacy?
Well, in the city of Jackson today, the mayor is a black man, and the police chief, as opposed to the one who arrested us 50 years ago, name is Rebecca Coleman, a black woman. So, and the four largest cities in Mississippi today have black mayors. And, of course, as Bob has said, we have Barack Obama as president.
Yes.
And let me end by saying this, and one day we know there will be a Jewish president in the White House, and I hope there won't be a Donald Trump to question whether or not he was born in Israel. He or she was born in Israel. Okay.
Well, Hank Thomas, I cannot thank you enough for your courage and your patriotism all those summers ago, and to you, Congressman Filner, for your courage and patriotism and your continued service to our country. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you for having us on.
And my name is Jamie Floyd. I am in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, our very own Brooke Gladstone and her new book, The Influencing Machine.